my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to 91.7 FM, Storrs, Connecticut. Bicycle Talk, episode 489, to be broadcast Wednesday, July 1st, 2026, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment and I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can reach out to me right down here below on Facebook Live, or you can also send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. New Bike Lash. Bikelash, quote-unquote, is a misdirected ploy. The nation is in the midst of another war on bikes. Bikelash is the portmanteau of bike and backlash. It refers to the intense, often highly vocal opposition from motorists, residents, and business owners to the creation of expansion of cycling infrastructure, such as bike lanes, e-bike regulations, and pedestrian-friendly streets. We'll talk a little bit more about this in the show. Just drives me nuts when things like this come up. Anyway, on a positive side, more people are traveling by bicycle than by car in Paris. Yeah, Paris is rapidly evolving into a city of transportation cyclists. Official measurements show. A groundbreaking survey conducted by the academics of l'Institut Paris Région, Europe's largest urban planning environmental agency, provides fascinating insights into the changing landscape of urban mobility in the French capital. More of that in the show. The e-bike project still goes on. Wow, I am impressed. I got to tell you, I think I may have converted. As far as a commuter piece goes, it's and a utilitarian vehicle. I think everybody should have an e-bike. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's worked out really well for me. And I just see so many uses for it. And the practicality of it is great. And I went 3 days last week and I did not drive my car at all. Zippo. Never even sat in it. Beautiful, isn't it? Anyway, ride your bike. Really could save your life. And also, so you know, the e-bike is still an assist bike, so I am still working at a fairly high level cardiovascularly and also muscle-wise. I'm definitely working hard. But anyway, I'm sold. I didn't think I ever would be. I thought it was going to be that guy that said, you know what, I'm not putting my body on one of these things forever because I'm a cyclist. And you know what? I am a cyclist and I'm also an e-bike rider. Hey, there you go. I also teach indoor cycling, but that doesn't make me bad, does it? I got a lot of things I do. Anyway, a shout out to my friend and early morning bicycle commuter, Karen. Brand new Custom 7. Boy, is it pretty. Oh, what a gorgeous, gorgeous bicycle. And this is why you choose a custom bicycle. Impressive. I might do a future episode on that and the custom bike and the where, the when, and the why and all that, but we'll hold that one off this time. I've got other things to discuss today because we got a lot of things going on right now. Like it's the end of June and you know what that means. July 4th, this Saturday, is the Tour de France, the opening stage of the Tour de France in Barcelona. And they're going to be in Spain for 3 days, and then they will drop over the line and be back into France, into the motherland. So here we go. It's going to be exciting. It should be really cool. The first day is a team time trial. If you've never seen a team time trial before, it's certainly worth watching. You want to see people that can ride extremely fast, 2 inches off the back of the next person's wheel, and ride with incredible efficiency. It's something to see. It really is something to see. So anyway, that'll be the opening day of the Tour de France this Saturday, July 4th. And as I will remind you every week, and I continue to do this on a positive side, it's an important time as of the year because more people are in need of bicycles. The Windham Area Interfaith Ministry Program, bicycle program, is alive and kicking, and they need your old bike. They need bicycles donated to them so they can fix them up and give them to people that really use them and really need them for transportation. So big shout out to Wayne. I hope this program is going well for you. I hope I'm actually sending people to you. And anyway, we'll talk a little more about that at another time. Mechanical Minute and Bicycle Tips. This is what we're going to use to dive right into our show. All right. Here's why. Today, I'm going to talk about heat. Why am I going to talk about heat? Because it's hot out. It's a good reason, right? It's not just hot out, it's humid out. So it's hot, humid, can be really, really restrictive and difficult weather to ride your bicycle in. And why I'm bringing it up right now is that Europe is in the midst of a huge heat wave. And the Tour de France starts on Saturday. So this could mean some issues as far as the riders go. I hope everyone stays safe. I hope everyone is able to get through the heat and is conditioned enough to handle it. But we're going to talk today a little bit about heat. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. And it is definitely a thing. Okay, let's see here. Where's my heat? Okay. This is from Bike Radar, and it's 9 tips to surviving cycling in the heat, and from how much you drink or to why you should take a hot bath. A hot bath in the heat? Really? How to stay hydrated, fueled, and safe when cycling in the heat. Yeah, it's a big deal, this heat thing, and it will really wreck you. And I have been on the other end of it. I've been very close to heat stroke. I never quite went there, but started to feel some of the problems that can happen from the heat. And I'm usually pretty good in the heat because I am a very thin person. And I, quite honestly, I rode in with knee warmers and a long sleeve jersey on this morning. It was in the mid 60s. It was cold. Yeah. But I like to be warm. When I'm warm, when it gets up around that 75 to 80 degree mark is when I feel most comfortable on my bike. But that's me. And everyone is going to be different. Depends a lot about your body structure, your possibilities, and abilities to handle the heat. And so there are things that can be tough to play with here with the heat. So water sports aside, cycling is probably the most pleasurable physical activity in a heat wave. The speed of the bike and the cooling blanket of air can be a remedy to roasting conditions. Nothing like going down a hill on a hot day. Feels nice, it's refreshing, it's cool. You know, it definitely cools you down a little bit, especially if you had to work really hard to get over the hill and now you're sweaty because you worked hard to get over the hill and then you go down, you got that whole cooling effect going on. But, you know, as you know, wind chill in the wintertime can be really a problem. And you're working hard also in the wintertime, and then you go screaming down a hill, and now you're freezing to death. And so that is a different story. So this is why if you're going to stay out and you're going to be sweating in the heat on a long bicycle ride or even an hour or two at a time, you have to stay really, really hydrated, because hydration is the key to helping you with the heat. In terms of performance, an Australian study found that when cyclists exercise at 32 centigrade heat, their power output drops by 6.5%, while dehydration, cramping, and hypotremia, when the concentration of sodium in your blood is abnormally low, are all dangers of insufficient fueling on the bike. Now, if you're someone like me, both my sister and I have a family history of low sodium levels, so we have to be really, really careful about this. And I'm trying to study more about that and see if I can figure out better ways to retain the sodium in my body, because I don't have a blood pressure problem, and that would be an issue if you had high blood pressure. You'd want to kind of stay away from the sodium. But my sodium levels are super low, and I think it's part of a family history thing, because my sister has the same thing. So we have to be very, very careful about keeping our sodium levels up, believe it or not. I know, salt your food, salt your food. All the things they tell you not to do to take care of your heart, I have to do to get my sodium levels up. It's kind of funny. But so anyway, keeping all this in mind, we have 9 tips here on how to stay hydrated and fueled. Okay, and there's, of course, lots and lots of articles. If you're looking for something like this, there's lots of information online which can help you through. But it is always best to consult a physician if you are having issues with dehydration and low sodium levels. You definitely want to talk to your local physician and see if they can help you out with this sort of thing. Hypoatremia is a condition when the concentration of sodium in your blood is abnormally and dangerously low and can lead to athletes collapsing, or worse, during an endurance sports event. It can be the result of athletes shifting from slightly under drinking before training to significantly over drinking in pre-training with plain water or a weak sports drink, which leads to an inadequate replacing of sodium in the body. And hydration, which helps the athlete establish how much sodium is lost when they sweat, and develop personalized hydration and fueling strategies. So yeah, you do have to pay attention to this, and you have to understand who you are and what you have to deal with here. So it's very, very important. So how do you balance between preloading and overdrinking? Good question. Sometimes it's just a big fat experiment, and you gotta kind of play it by ear and see what makes you feel good. But of course, you can get very scientific with this if you can find someone that will handle this and analyze this for you scientifically. It's great. So take in 1 or 2 additional cups of fluid each day in the final couple of days before, let's say, your event. Maybe you're doing a charity ride. Maybe you're doing a bicycle race. Maybe you're just planning on going out for a long ride with a bunch of friends. Maybe it's the weekend coming up and you're in a club ride, and the club ride this week is going to go out for an hour longer than it went the last time. So these things are really important to pay attention to. So 1 or 2 additional cups of fluid each day in the final couple of days before your event. But don't go crazy drinking above what your body is telling you it needs. Urine, color, and thirst are helpful indicators of hydration status and disposal. Ensure that your pee is not too dark in color or low in volume. Don't mistake a large amount of really clear urine as a universally good thing. You can increase your sodium intake by adding electrolytes to water and that you're drinking, or by putting additional salt on your food. If you have issues with electrolytes, if you have had problems with the overconcentration, maybe a kidney stone or something like that, this is a delicate subject, so you do have to be very, very careful about this. I've never experienced that. I've experienced a lot of other things in my life, but I never experienced that. So I am generally going through at least 2 pints of electrolytes a day. One is usually first thing in the morning as I'm teaching an indoor cycling class, or maybe out for an early morning bike ride. And then I always have one later in the day too. Primarily, I like to take my electrolytes after I've eaten dinner, believe it or not, and I'm getting ready for bed. I know, wakes you up in the middle of the night, you gotta use the bathroom, I understand that, but I'm willing to take that risk versus the risk of dehydration. So the other thing that happens when I do that is I'm less prone to cramping. when I do that. And cramping in the middle of the night is not a fun thing. It wakes you up out of a perfectly sound sleep, and then you're, you know, stretching and falling out of the bed and trying to push your legs around to try to get them to stop cramping. It's a real problem. I'm also a magnesium guy, but maybe we'll talk about that later as we get deeper into this little explanation here. So staying hydrated is a key thing, and the health dangers of dehydration are very clear, but it's also clear the impact on performance that when you're dehydrated, with more blood sent to your skin to release heat and less going to your muscles to deliver oxygen and nutrients. I never heard it explained that way. That's really good. The result is a low power output, higher heart rate and breathing rates, and your brain also suffers a drop in neurotransmitters, which leads to fatigue. Very interesting. Drinking a strong electrolyte drink to optimize your hydration status before long, hot, or really hard rides and events can significantly improve your performance. I'm going to throw this out there in the midst of all this, and that is, make sure that you are drinking a high-quality electrolyte. You can get electrolytes in many, many ways. There's over-the-counter. Obviously, some of the things that pop out, not that I'm supposed to mention brand names, but Gatorade, Powerade, things like that, would be a brand name that might be out there. It's not always the best electrolyte out there. So take a really good look at what's in your electrolytes. Make sure that it will help you with your performance. It's extremely important. If you're trying to significantly improve your performance, you can preload, and there's strong evidence that taking an additional sodium with fluids before you start sweating is effective in promoting increased acute fluid retention and in improving endurance performance, especially in the heat. I'm playing around with this one too. I'm thinking that instead of, like today, I rode my bike into the community center, taught my class, rode back home. Of course, I had electrolytes on board while I was riding the bike. Maybe, and this is, I'll experiment with this and I'll let you know how I feel from it. The idea should be to put that first pint of electrolyte down before I leave on my bike. Maybe give it, you know, a half an hour or so to settle in place. Again, it's all a big experiment, and everybody is going to be different. So I am not giving you solid advice for you. You need to figure this out yourself. And I also encourage the assistance from someone medically able to help you with this sort of thing. So please be careful. So we're going to try, by doing that, we're going to try to improve our endurance performance, especially in the heat. Number three on my list here is preventing sunburn. Yeah, sunburn is a problem, and you do have to be careful about getting sunburnt through your jersey, through your cycling jersey, believe it or not. Radiation from the sun is a factor that catches many people out, you know, by surprise. A dab of sun cream does not give you a permanent shield against the sun. In most cases, you have about a 2-hour barrier, and you'll need to reapply if you're riding in the sun for longer than this. That is also interesting. So you're putting your sunblock on before you leave. You're going out. Maybe you're going for a 4-hour ride. Halfway in, you might have wanted to apply a little bit more sunscreen onto your body, especially if you're fair-skinned. You're going to feel that effect and see that effect much quicker. So you just really have to be super careful about that. So you have about a 2-hour barrier, and you're going to need to reapply if you're riding in the sun for any longer than that. That is another thing that I was not completely aware of. So heat, you can do something called heat acclimatization, and it's useful if your event is somewhere hot because it teaches your body to sweat. And you could do this at lower intensities indoors. When you're on a turbo trainer or an indoor trainer, turn off the fan or shut the windows, and you'll gradually improve. it makes your body respond by sweating more and therefore turning your body into a very efficient machine, just like the one you're riding. You can also move your turbo somewhere hot, such as, inside of a sunroom or something like that. I would not recommend this, by the way. But if that's what you need to do, then that's what you need to do. There's a triathlete and famed heat sufferer, Johnny Brownlee, who did, before the 2020 Olympics, he did this in a bid to replicate the heat of Tokyo, where the Yorkshire winter, and he's from England, was a result of, was a gold medal in the relay and a top five finisher in the individual event. So yeah, you can put yourself in a heat stress situation. I'm not talking about wearing plastic bags while you're working out. I'm just talking about maybe not using the fan as much on you, not cooling yourself down as much. Let your body do what your body needs to do. Teach your body how to sweat and how to react in heat. Another way you can do that is having a hot bath. Yeah, a hot bath? Really? You got to be kidding me. Well, that's not really, no, we're not kidding here. We're trying to acclimate your body to response to heat, getting it comfortable to do that. Results have found that if you take a hot bath after exercising in cool conditions, building up from 10 to 20 to 40 minutes in the bath over a course of 6 days, you'll get a profound reduction in resting core temperature of about a third of a degree, which is more than bettered exercise acclimatization. Okay, choose liquids and semi-solids for fuel. Hot weather can also upset your digestion, reducing blood flow to the gastrointestinal tract. Dehydration can also impair our ability to transport nutrients through the intestine lining, and that's from a cycling nutritionist. Heat will lower your appetite, so opt with for liquids and semi-solids, such as energy gels. Try making homemade flapjacks, pancakes, for long rides because they have a higher moisture content than many of the dry energy bars. Interesting. So, wearing cool clothing, of course, what you wear in summer is crucial as kit choices for riding in the cold. Your helmet should feature plenty of cooling vents, and you'll need a pair of your good sunglasses to filter harmful UV rays. I just invested in a new set of sunglasses. I've been watching all these European pros and the races and all, and they're wearing these enormous shields on their faces. And I thought, well, that's kind of a good idea. I remember way back in the day when Greg LeMond was winning the Tour de France, he used to wear these Oakley Pilots. And they were really ridiculous looking. They were huge. And I had the bike shop at the time, so of course I went out and bought myself a pair of Oakley Pilots because I wanted to see, they're called factory pilots. I wanted to see how they worked. And the beauty of them is that they shield so much of your face that you don't have a lot of, you've got just a really great view. You've got a lot of protection. They're kind of nice, but they're kind of goofy looking back then. Now they're still a little goofy looking, but I just broke down and got myself a new pair of glasses. And they are complete shields, but they have no frames on them. So there's no frame across the top. There's no frame across the bottom. And the beauty of that is because I have this problem with flexibility in my neck, when I'm down low on my bike in the drops and I'm trying to look forward, I now no longer have a bar on the top of my glasses to look through, because sometimes you get the angle off and, you know, the glasses may slide down your nose a little bit or whatever. I really like them. I'm sold. I think they're a great investment and certainly protect your eyes. It's really important. I've been protecting my eyes my whole life because I've been a cyclist, and we have, in my family, we have a history of macular degeneration and other various eye issues, and I don't have any of them. And I can say that for sure. I have no problem whatsoever. My sister, on the other hand, It's got a little bit more of a problem with that. My mom had a big problem with it. My uncle had a big problem with it. So I've been protecting my eyes my whole life, and it seems to have been a good payoff. So even if you're young and you're like, I can handle this. No, you can't. You can't handle it. You can't handle that. You can't handle not putting sunblock on. You really have to start paying more attention. Why? Because the earth is changing. We are in a place that is not a positive direction that we're going in right now, and we are warming up every year, and we have more sun exposure every year. So that is definitely a problem. So you might look for a cycling jersey that has mesh panels or ventilation, but watch out for sunburn, because you can burn right through the jersey. You got to be really careful about that. Light colored clothing is better at reflecting heat, but some dark jerseys feature a textile called cold black, which helps reflect the sun to prevent heat buildup. Interesting. Color makes a difference more than you might think, especially when moving. And so there's definitely an issue there. Maybe the light clothing isn't the answer. There's also, there are some clothings that are made with a UV block on them, and that's a possibility. I have friends who wear UV block jerseys that are long sleeved in the summer when it's really, really hot, but they do it because of the UV, because they get burned so badly and they can't get enough sunblock out of their body, so they wear special jerseys. The other thing, and something I really, really caught on to a number of years ago, was a summer base layer, which helps wick sweat away, circulates airflow more and evenly, and it avoids sweat pooling. So I like wearing a base layer. I have a number of them that are just sleeveless, so they're just keeping my core protected and they're drawing off of my core. I like them a lot. You can get ones with short sleeves, you can get them with long sleeves, and you can get them with UV block too. So there's, you have to shop around to see what's best for you and what will work, but you definitely can do that. So be aware of the conditions. A blacktop road absorbs heat from the sun easily, and by the time your event starts, the road surface can easily start going up from that point. In turn, air directly above is heated up like a kettle, so when the temperature in the shade is maybe down in the 70s or 80s, you could end up being in the 90s when you're on the road. That heat just builds up off the road. And where does it sit? It sits right down there. It sits right down there on the top of the blacktop. So you're going to be riding through more heat than you realize you're riding through, even if the air temperature, quote unquote, is not that hot. So be careful. Black surfaces on the road can be a big, big problem. And sometimes roads at the Tour de France reach such extreme temperatures that the tarmac can become sticky, catching unsuspected riders as they descend at 80 plus kilometers per hour. It's definitely things you have to watch for. I know you've been out there riding your bike on a really, really hot day, and you've hit a patch, and you kind of hear it sticking to your tires as you go through. Anybody out there experience that? I certainly have. Hello, Thomas. Thank you for watching today. So now the organizers have been taking notice of that, and they deploy water tankers before the peloton are due through and spray sections of road that are susceptible to melting. Yeah. And let's see. Number 9 on my list is calculate your sweat rate. Estimating your sweat rate can be useful when working out as much and how much and what type of fluid you might want to be drinking and training with in all of your events. All you need to establish an estimate is an accurate set of weighing scales and a drying towel. Before you start the workout, go to your bathroom and weigh yourself, ideally with no clothes on. And remember, if you're planning to drink, hold your water bottles and include them in your before weight. All right. Usually people try to simulate race pace so they calculate how much fluid they're going to need for all their events. And be sure to log the temperature, humidity, intensity of the workout so you can monitor how your sweat rate changes across different conditions. Indoor sessions are so much easier to control, so it's recommended doing this kind of test on a trainer or on a treadmill or whatever you're using for your indoor workouts. After the workout, towel yourself dry as best you can, and then weigh yourself again, ideally, again, with no clothes, as your clothing can retain a lot of sweat and also a lot of weight. Remember to hold your water bottles to account for how much you drank, even if they are empty. So you start out, maybe you have two full water bottles, you weigh yourself with no clothes on to begin with, you record that weight, and then you go out and you do your event or your ride or whatever. When you get back on the scale, remember, take those two bottles. Maybe one of them is empty, maybe one of them isn't. Maybe you've emptied both of them, but you want to make sure you hold those in your hands so you can account for how much you drank and the weight of the bottles themselves, which are going to be, you know, close to a pound for the bottle. So that definitely is a factor. You estimate your sweat rate simply by subtracting the weight from before weight. For example, if you're following a 1 hour workout and your weight was, let's say, 135 pounds and then your weight afterwards was 132 pounds, then you lost 3 pounds in the ride. So you really want to check and see what your sweat rate is. I know that there's a off-road running race in California, Western States 100. It's a 100-mile trail race, and when you go through the checkpoints at that particular race, they weigh you, and they will not let you go unless if you lose a certain percentage of your weight and you have not been able to replace it while you've been working out. So it's a safety factor. They don't want to lose anyone. They don't want anybody to get hurt or injured. And, you know, once you start becoming dehydrated, you also become, you have some problems with, you know, delusion. And it's a nasty thing that can happen to you. So dehydration is something that you should avoid at all costs. Very, very important. That's my little piece on the mechanical minute, longer than I thought it was going to be, but you just really have to know how to survive and beat the heat on your bike. And if you don't have like a professional cycling team and team doctors and all that are able to help you and evaluate all these things, then you got to kind of figure it out on your own. But the first time you run into a heat exhaustion issue, you will remember that for a long time after. It's scary. It really is scary. I have been cycling for so long that I'll be on a group ride, and if I see someone starting to maybe weave a little bit or something, which is unusual for that rider because they're usually what we call a good wheel, I ride up alongside them. I take a look at them, make sure they're still sweating. If they stop sweating, we got a big problem, and I will force them to pull over and let's get you back down to normal terms here before we progress forward. Even asking other riders to, you know, give that person maybe a little bit of their liquid too if they have run out of liquid. So it's super important. I have a great story. My friend Keith and I were out. We were out on a long ride. There was a bunch of us. We were on a really long ride. I think an 80-mile ride or something. It was one of these, you know, crazy 90 degrees with huge numbers and humidity. It was just sticky, awful. You know, not a comfortable day to be on a bike for a long time. Probably should have shortened the ride that day, but we didn't do that. We were just out riding. And he started to show signs of weaving in the road and just making odd decisions. And I rolled up next to him and I could see his face was completely dry. That is a problem. That's a huge problem. I immediately made him pull over as I knew that we were going by a stream on the side of the road. And I got him off his bike. I walked him down to the stream and I made him stick his head in there and then splash water on him. And fortunately, you know, we live in northeastern Connecticut. We have a lot of opportunities like that. And the water is mostly good. You know, it's, I wouldn't want to drink that water, but it was definitely good enough to cool you down. And I even had him take his cycling shoes and socks off and put his feet in the water. And we sat there for about 10, 15 minutes while he cooled down and kept putting water on his forehead and cooling him down. And he was a lot better. He started feeling a lot better. We got back on the bikes. And the moment I saw somebody out in their yard in front of their house, I said, pull over here. We're going to go talk to this person. We went up to their house and we said, hey, have you got a hose or something? We really need to fill our water bottles back up because we just went through a lot of water. It's a really hot day. People are so nice and so accommodating. It's usually not a problem. So don't be afraid to knock on that occasional door too. Let's move on to the next thing on my list. If we can get there, let's see, what do we got? So there's a podcaster who has a podcast called Arrested Mobility. And he's got an article in Streets Blog about why the new backlash is a misdirected ploy. So this is the, we're running into a problem with cars and bikes again. As infrastructure starts to increase, more and more bicycles are getting out on the road. And as car sizes increase, don't ask me why they do that. That is just the most ridiculous thing I've seen in years. As the car size increases, so does the room on the road of which you are sharing with us or with them. So really, really important. And unfortunately, the bike lash is, it's an intense, often highly vocal opposition from motorists, residents, and business owners and to the creation of expansion of bicycle infrastructure such as bike lanes, e-bike regulations, and pedestrian-friendly streets. If you don't want us on the streets, then build our infrastructure. That's all we ask. We're not asking for a lot. Most of us drive cars as well as ride bicycles. Just, you know, let's talk about this in a very civilized fashion because, you know, someday we could be like Paris. We could be like Copenhagen. We could be like Amsterdam, where 70% of the people transport themselves by bicycles. That's a good thing. That's a really good thing. Cuts down on pollution. It cuts down on congestion of the roads because you have less cars, more bicycles. There's more room to put 10 bicycles in the space of one car than there is one car in the space of one car. What does that do? It cuts back on traffic. It cuts back on the amount of pollution that's coming out of the car because they don't have to stop as much because there's not as much traffic. It all just makes sense. And I won't even get into what it does for the health of the riders. It's just incredible. It's just such a beautiful thing. So, this is a real thing, and it's a problem because people who drive cars or trucks get upset with parking removal. Also, businesses get upset with parking removal. What they don't understand is 10 people on bicycles is way more than one person in a car. So if you had 10 patrons in front of your business that came in by bicycle versus one car, which only brought one person, I'm not going to go to business 101 here or anything, but you could do the math. You can figure it out pretty quickly. Why not serve more people that don't take up hardly any of the space out in front of your business and even put a little sign out there that says bike friendly business, bike friendly parking, a cafe that focuses on cyclists. You know, that's a good thing. Everybody I know who has a cafe, who has or a place, we have a place in Willimantic that sells cupcakes. And she goes, yeah, I get so many people on bicycles here. Well, you're right on the airline trail. Of course you do. It's perfect. It's a perfect place to stop. Let's stop. And last I knew, the last time I rode my bicycle, I was hungry afterwards, or I was even hungry during it. So these are very, very simple things that people can do. And if you want to be a bike-friendly business, be a bike-friendly business and advertise it. Put a sign out front. Free bike parking right here. You know, and restrict it to a motorized vehicle. They're not allowed to park there. Only the bicycles are allowed to park there. So these are all things you have to make, you have to make notice. So if you want to counter bike lash, modern transportation advocates shift the conversation away from polarizing debates like bikes versus cars, and successful tactics include storytelling, start human-centered stories of childhood memories of riding your bikes rather than debating bike the dense statistics. Safety and family focus, emphasizing that protected bike lanes allow children, seniors, and everyday commuters to navigate the city safely. And building coalitions, partnering with broader groups that value health, economic vitality, and green space. And if you're dealing with local pushback or you want to explore urban planning in your area, you ask the questions. Is there a specific bike lane or street project that is causing debate in your neighborhood? Are you looking for advocacy resources or case studies of how other cities handled this? There's lots of information out there on this. So, yeah, you can beat bike lash. It's really not... you can certainly talk back to it. There's a site in California that talks about it with a little bit more intensity, referring to the War on Cars podcast and other places. And you have to understand that drivers are cyclists sometimes, and almost all cyclists are passengers sometimes. And you need to blur those lines, just like we blurred the lines between queer people and straight people, by convincing them that, like, you know, we're all right there. We're in your workplace, in your family, in your community, on your block. Maybe getting on with us, getting along with us is going to be better, not just for us, but for you too. Protected bike lanes have been shown to reduce fatalities for the people in all modes of transportation, including people in cars. Everyone is a pedestrian for at least some time during the day, even if it's just walking from their car to the door. We all want safe streets, but, you know, we don't have to live in fear that our children or our grandparents might get struck by a car without warning. It's easy to be angry at people in cars, especially if it's a careless or spiteful driver that has menaced you. And sometimes that has happened to many of us at one time or another. But bike riders are in the minority, and our success of winning acceptance and support for the infrastructure is we need to make biking safe, ideas and present them to people who aren't bike riders. That sets a stage of how we consider to respond to people who complain about bike riders on and off the road. So here we go. I like this piece right here. People driving cars get stuck in a lot of things. Most commonly, other cars, traffic jams. We won't even mention McDonald's drive-thrus. I did say that. Yes. 4.5 minutes, by the way, to get through a McDonald's drive-thru. 33 seconds is on average what it takes to get around a cyclist in the road in front of you. Where are your priorities? You can wait 4.5 minutes, but you can't wait 30 seconds? Something a little screwed up there. But anyway, to a driver who honks and yells, you just wave and smile to him. That's all I do. Do not, I repeat, do not engage in the IQ salute. No one needs to know your IQ. No one needs to know that you're barely able to function because your IQ is 1. So don't go there. Don't engage in a situation on the street that's getting heated. You don't want to be dead right, because you might be dead. So you don't want to do that. When discussing with a friend after the fact, ask them to look at their clock when they got stuck behind a bike, and look again at when they were able to drive faster. The short duration slowdown may help put in a little bit of perspective. All of these things, these tools are super important, especially if you have an encounter with an automobile, with a person driving a motorized vehicle. Explain to them that you just ask a simple question. First of all, if someone pulls over to talk with me, the first thing I tell them is, thank you so much for pulling over and talking to me about this. It sets a different stage. It doesn't set an anger stage. It sets a, how come you're not mad at me stage. And that kind of throws their anger and their rage into a different place, and they don't know what to do with it. So learn how to talk to people. It's not that hard. It really isn't. I spent my entire life talking to people, and I'm talking to you now. So here we are. It's not that hard. Anyway, there's so many things. You know, bikes should be on the sidewalk. Bikes are a menace. Use the shared paths. You know, give me more shared paths, and I'll use the shared paths. So bike riders are at fault for at least the half bike car collisions. Actually, that's not true. people in cars often say, this is the number one response, that bike came out of nowhere when they hit someone. That doesn't necessarily mean the bike rider was irresponsible. It might mean the driver of the vehicle that weighs thousands of pounds wasn't turning their head, scanning the roadway, or accounting for their blind spots. Police have a windshield perspective because most patrol officers spend their days behind the wheel of a car. Bias towards motor vehicles and a lack of awareness of what constitutes safe cycling can skew collision reports. The determination of the fault of a car-bike crash is unreliable at best and biased at worst. We need better driver education. Yes, please. So anyway, these are things you can deal with to take care of bike lash. Good old bike lash. Okay. I also have posted, since I'm on kind of a strong advocacy show here today, I've also posted a video on my Facebook Bicycle Talk page, and it's a video on Dutch cycling and what they have right. And it is worth a watch, definitely worth a watch. It's available on YouTube. I put the link on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, so you can check it out and see what you think. The Dutch have it right. They figured it out, and they have a lot less pollution, congestion, etc. It's not so bad, and they are very healthy people too, both mentally and physically, both. Bicycle racing, okay. It's the Tour de France. What's with that? European heat. Yeah, we are talking about the heat, and the heat is definitely a thing today. And the extreme heat could force a radical rethink in the Tour de France, and new tour race times and new dates are being argued over the fears of heat-related risks because it is just so hot there right now, and they're going through a huge heat wave. And hundreds of heat wave related deaths in Europe in recent days have led to serious concerns over potential health risks at Tour de France, with some advocating significant changes on how the race is held. I got to tell you something. I was on my bicycle this morning at 4:45 in the morning, and it was cool. It was very nice. Start planning your rides around the early morning hours. It's really, you've got a much safer time to ride your bike. If you're using your bike for commuting, it's wonderful for that because you can ride to your workplace or whatever, and you can be there in the cooler weather, not be quite as sweaty once you get there. Okay, of course, at the end of the day, you're going to have to deal with the heat because it's going to get warm, but you can do that. You can just ride a little slower at the end of the day. Just take your time. Work is over. Use it for a brain drain. Use it for, you know, a mental health break. I'm just going to ride my bike and enjoy my ride home. Boy, it's hot. Ah, who cares? I'm just going to ride real slow today. You can adjust that. So anyway, back to the Tour de France. Yeah, there's a lot of concern here. Health is a big part of it. And it's something that they're going to have to be monitoring very, very closely because you don't want to have an overheated cyclist or bike racer in the middle of the peloton. If they get weeby and strange, they could cause a big accident. So They're watching this very, very closely, watching the temperatures, because they're hitting right now here, I've got it in Celsius, 44.3 degrees Celsius. That's really, really, really hot, and some of the hottest weather they've ever had. Emergency services recorded 109 heat-related deaths in 24 hours, although this number is related to just those who succumbed at their homes and or in public spaces. The figure did not include those who died in hospitals. The tour is even worse. You've got all this big Peloton all holding heat in. So you got extra heat there you got to be super careful of. I think they're just going to have to be super cautious here. And quite honestly, I mean, as it is already, they start the tour fairly early in the day. And so if you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning here on East Coast time, it's often started already because of the European time difference. But they may have to even start earlier, which will mean you're going to watch the recorded version unless you have night shift of some sort. But anyway, it's tour is very difficult. You repeat your efforts in over 21 days, and imagine that we have just experienced a heat wave for 6 days, and then we're being told that there could be a second period of a big heat wave. It's definitely a problem and something that we are going to have to watch, and they will be watching very carefully. Let's take a quick look at the Visma lineup here for the Tour de France, because we have Wout is out, and we've also lost one other rider too, but there is going to be some replacements coming in here. So what do we have here? One of those replacements is a young Italian rider who is his name is David Piganzoli, and David was really, really critically important in the Giro and did a great job. He is back to do the Tour de France, so he will be there. Some of the regulars like Sepp Kuss and Matteo Jorgensen will also be there too, and Victor Campenaert will be there. And I think the new other one was Per Strandhagenis, and I'm not sure what he's all about, but there's also Bruno Armatrell and Eduardo Affini. That is the lineup for the Visa Lisa bike team. The UAE team with Tadej Pogacar, Isaac Del Toro, very strong. Adam Yates, very strong. Brandon McNulty, very strong. At a headline, they're just powerhouses for that squad as Tadej Pogacar is chasing his record-tying fifth win of the Tour de France. It's going to be good. It's going to be exciting. I can't wait. It's just, this is going to be a unique tour, I do believe. There are two extremely powerful teams here, and they're just stacked seven-man support crews, and just really a beautiful thing. So let's see, even with all this, there's going to be some things to talk about. Del Toro is making Mexican history. Del Toro will debut one of the most anticipated tour rookies in recent memory, not counting, of course, Paul Cesas. Of course, the 22-year-old will probably be leading half the teams in France. Instead, he'll be spending July riding for Pogacar. I mean, he could be doing much better other places, but you're on a team, you know your job, you know what you're supposed to do. And then the mountain crews are Yates and McNulty. They're both very strong climbers. It's going to be really interesting to see. And then on the Visma squad, where are we here? We've got a number of solid riders here too. Definitely some changes, because Van Aert will be in no shape to be able to do this after that big elbow infection that he had. So that's just not going to work. But, there are other extremely seasoned and strong riders on the Visma Lisa bike team. I think both teams are pretty equal as far as that goes. You know how we're going to be able to tell? Day one, team time trial. Let's see how 8 guys ride together and see how well they can finish together. That's really important. If they're in good shape, it's not a long time trial, so it's going to be over with fairly quickly, but we will be able to see the performance levels at pretty closely. So we'll see what happens at the team time trial and see how these teams look. I think we're in for a treat, folks. I think it's going to be a good year. And as always, I can't wait because this is, once again, the Giro, the Tour de France, the Vuelta a España, the 3 big, huge classic races, big stage races. So, yeah, this is going to be a fun time. I can't wait. So we'll see more, I'm sure. And what more do I have here? That's it. Oh, I never got to the story. We'll cover this one next week because I wanted to talk a little bit more about how more people are traveling by bicycle than car in Paris. This is a growing trend, by the way, just in case. The growing trend is really all about people backing off on the cost of gasoline-powered vehicular travel, and also the cost of just the car itself or the truck itself that people are riding around in. The prices have gone way, way up over the last few years. Then we have a little interruption, like hard times on the world front as far as people getting along with one another. There's a war that's created. There's a big block on shipping oil out of the Middle East, and there's just a lot of uncertainty about transportation and power, of course, too, in the Middle East, and it affects the world all the way around the world. It makes an effect. So what's the answer? Reset. Go back. Here we go. Remember COVID? Do you remember COVID? Yeah. So COVID created a worldwide situation, a worldwide crisis. And what did people do almost immediately? Instead of getting onto mass transportation where they would be next to all these people that may be infected and therefore infect them, they went on to get on their bicycles and transport themselves on their bicycles. And there was an enormous bicycle boom. And that's when big cities like Paris and like New York started changing around their infrastructure to be able to accommodate the extra people on the streets. So, yeah, it's coming, folks. It really is. That's it. That's all I got for today. I have more, but obviously we'll talk a little bit more about it next week because we've got the Tour de France coming up on Saturday. Yay! And I've got the following weekend a Farm to Fork Fondo up in Burlington, Vermont. So that'll be fun too. It's actually on the islands, the Lake Champlain Islands. Very, very cool. So that's my big event thing. The Tour de France is coming. There's other things going on right now. I just don't have a lot here to tell you about. People need to send in more information to me about their events, and I will tell people about it. Finishing points. Now, the price of gas has come down a little bit, but not really that much. Have you gone out on the bike yet? 3 days. I got 3 days last week without driving my car. That's exciting to me. That's really, really exciting. For all of you out there that listen to me, that get on their bicycle every day and go, what are you, 3 days? Good for you. Good for you. It's not a competition. It's just encouraging that you're doing that. So anyway, freedom begins on your bicycle. Don't ever forget that. Bicycling is freedom, and life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people ride bikes, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can all make more people know the joy of bicycling. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. You got to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. And hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking your car for a day and ride your bike instead. You're going to surprise yourself. And remember that every person you pass, whether you're in a car or on a bike, has someone waiting for them at home. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. And you have been listening to Bicycle Talk. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Get on your bikes and ride!